Alrighty, everyone. How is everyone today?
Good.
That's good. Who's excited for study week in like 5 months? Alright, so this is the first of 6 nights we're going to have leading up to study week on the 2nd of July. And tonight we've got James McCann. He's going to do a background to the entire book of 1 Peter. And just so you're aware, the format is tonight, James is going to do a bit of background. Then we're going to have some dinner, which is supplied for all you guys. Then we're going to go through the workbooks together. So we'll just kick tonight off with a word of prayer, and then we'll do a reading to introduce tonight. All right, so just as a bit of an introduction to the background tonight, we're reading Luke 22.
Excellent. All right. Can you feel it? Gee, I better sit down. I'm not feeling it. Can you smell it? Study week. It's in the air. It's a vibe. You can smell it. It's like that beautiful rain that comes out and just absolutely showers the earth. And I think study week is something that it's all awesome to be inspired by and to look forward to. And I've got to think over the next 5 months how I can get there. There was a few plans. Like one was reduce my age by 20 years, but that was a little bit hard. The other one was like bribe the committee. That's probably a little bit unethical. But in the meantime, I've got to try and work out how I can actually get there. I'm thinking of sneaking in there in someone's bag. So if you actually like open up your room and you find me there, hopefully that's a boys' dorm, by the way. So, but anyway, all right. Now, we're coming to look at a very amazing person, and it's an amazing study. And I hope tonight, if you haven't already started, to in some way inspire you to start looking at this man, because there's so much detail. In fact, I don't in any way proclaim to know, you know, the background to Peter. I'm going to present to you hopefully tonight some thoughts, and hopefully that will get you started on your way. Has anyone actually started looking at the notes and started to filling it out? Okay. Okay, fair enough. Sorry. I was just about to cane you for that, but that was good. Glad you said that. All right, so if you do sort of start to open it up and sort of get cracking into this, one of the things I would really recommend you doing is actually building a bit of a profile. And I know this sort of sounds long and involved, but just starting by getting out a concordance or in your computer typing in Peter and actually looking at all the occurrences that Peter comes up and presents himself into the record. And the reason that I sort of like suggest that you do that is because you can actually start to get into the thinking, the feelings, the emotions of Peter himself. And one of the things that you'll find is that they will flow into the epistle and they will start popping up and you'll start to see some beautiful connections. Just before we do commence though, have you guys ever looked at, or thought about Peter before, and would you like to try and describe him? Like how would you from Sunday school and all that describe Peter?
Men of thunder.
Okay, James and John were called the men of thunder, but he was very much like that. He was a bit of a gung-ho guy. He was impulsive. Yeah. Is anyone here impulsive? Yeah. Good. Most people like sort of put their hand down and go, no, I'm not impulsive. It proves to me that I didn't put my hand up, so I don't have to prove that I'm impulsive. But you're all impulsive in a way. Okay. Every one of us is impulsive, and it just may be that it might be in a particular area. Anything else that you describe Peter as? Passionate. Yeah. He's a passionate man. He wears his heart on his sleeve, and that's one thing that I love about him. Okay. He's just out there in the sense that you know what he's thinking and he's sort of really trying hard, and yet all these emotions and feelings are sort of blinding him at times during the way. Any other words you'd use? Very zealous. Yeah. Very zealous. And particularly for who, by the way? Who is he particularly zealous for? He was zealous for his Lord. Yeah. And that's a really interesting characteristic that comes out. Would anyone describe him as being humble? Anyone thought of Peter as being humble? Yep, there are times, yep. Now, that's one of the things that you'll find about Peter. As you go through, you'll actually start to see that there are some amazing highs and there are some amazing lows in Peter's life. And the reason why I think that's really powerful for all of us is because there are times in our life where we are high, we're excited. They might be times like study week. There might be times when we're with family or friends. And yet, in his life, there were some really, really major lows. Okay? And we're going to see what he thought about during that time. If you look into, you know, even his own writings, he'll actually be very honest and tell you how he felt during that time. So one of the things I want you just to look at in terms of how important it is just to get a sort of a background on him is just come to John chapter 13. And when you do this and you go through the various gospel records and even into Acts and into his letters, you'll see he comes out as a very larger-than-life character. But this is just something that sits in my mind as just an amazing way to think about who Peter was. Now, in John chapter 13, can we have a reader? And if you want to share it around, that's fine. But let's read from John 13, verse 6 through to verse 9, please. Do you want to start up here and then we'll work our way across? One verse each, yeah?
John 13, verse 6. Then comes he, Simon Peter. Peter said unto him, Lord, dost thou wash my feet?
Jesus answered him, What I am doing, you do not understand now, but afterward you will understand.
Peter said unto him, Thou shalt never wash my feet. Jesus answered him, If I wash thee not, thou hast no part with me.
Simon Peter said unto him, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head.
All right, just tell me what you get from that that tells you a little bit about Peter's character. Sorry?
Over the top.
He is a bit over the top. It's either 0 or 100%. Yeah? Just picture that for a second, though. Son of God standing in your midst, about to come up to you and do something to you, and what do you say? No? Does anyone see a problem with that? Son of God comes up to you and says, I'm going to wash your feet. And Peter goes, you will never wash my feet. Who's the boss here? So here's an extremely passionate man who is very outspoken in certain times where he didn't really realize his place, in a sense. And I think that tells us that this man had a driving force in his mind that if he felt it was wrong, he would absolutely say it out loud in front of everyone, even if he was talking to the Son of God. Now, that's a good characteristic or a bad characteristic? It is a good characteristic. But what do you need to do with that characteristic? You need to control it and put it in the right way. Okay? And that's one of the most beautiful things about this man, is that Christ took him, and he took that character, and he pointed it in the right way. Now, one of the things we're going to learn about Peter is that he was named Peter. He wasn't originally called that by his parents. Now, if you've had a look at some of the background already, you obviously would have sort of come across Simon Peter as his name. But let's go back to John chapter 1 and let's have a look at sort of an introduction to why he was called Peter and just some of the events again. And I wish we had time to look at all of these in detail, because I think we could just keep digging down and actually see lots of fascinating things about Simon Peter. Now, if we have a look at John 1, can we have our next reader just start from verse 35 and we'll read through to verse 42, please?
Again, the next day after John stood and two of his disciples, and looking upon Jesus as he walked, he said, Behold, the Lamb of God. And the two disciples heard him speak, and they followed Jesus. Then Jesus turned and saw them following, and said unto them, What seek ye? And said unto him, Rabbi, which is to say, being interpreted, Master, where dwelleth thou?
He said to them, Come and see. They came and saw where he was staying, and remained with him that day. Now it was about the tenth hour.
One of the two, which heard John speak, followed him, was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother.
Excellent. Now, a few things I just want to throw out at you, just to sort of pin away in the back of your mind for your own study. Isn't it interesting that it's Andrew that actually brings Peter to Christ? Hold that thought for when we get back to John 21. Okay? Another little point that you might find interesting. Circle the idea that Andrew actually comes to him and said, we have found the Messiah. which is the Christ. If you follow Peter through the record and Christ through the record, those phrases come up quite a lot, and it's very significant because in Matthew chapter 16, that is the core issue that comes out when Peter was rebuked by Christ. Because what did Peter say initially? You are the Christ, the Son of God. Now, we'll come back to that later. I just want to throw it out there as a little concept that it links to Peter. There's something important in Peter's life as a theme that comes out in regard to the Messiah, because he had to come to understand what the Messiah really was. Okay? And we're going to see in his preaching in Acts 2 and Acts chapter 10 that he did come to appreciate that. But what are some of the detail that we learn about Peter from here? Let's just build a quick profile about him. What do you learn from Peter from those verses? Good. He had a brother. Andrew was his brother. What else do we learn? His name was Simon, but he was then called Simon Peter, and it's in this record that he's actually called Peter, which is Cephas. Okay? But obviously John calls him Simon Peter because he's writing after the event. Another little thing to throw out there to have a look at, just asterisks, look up all the occurrences of the phrase Simon Peter and why does it occur that way. When is he called Simon Peter? And when is he called Simon? And when is he called Peter? Okay? That may seem like boring stuff, but there's amazing little themes that again come out that sort of give us a little inkling. And what's fascinating is it's actually John that calls him Simon Peter the most. Okay? Why is that the case? Anyway, keep going. What else do we learn about him? He's called Peter, and we'll talk about what that means in a minute because it's on the third dot point on my slide, so I have to wait until I get one and two. What else do we know about him? Simon, son of Jonah. Okay, so we know something about his family connections as well. Does anyone know what Simon means? Hearing. It comes from the Old Testament, which is Simeon. Okay, and Simeon was Leah's second son, and it means hearing. And it's interesting that Christ is now going to change his name from hearing to the next one, which is Peter, which means rock. Now, son of Jonah is another fascinating little theme to follow through. Okay? Again, I suppose we don't have time, but I'm just sort of trying to whet your appetite of things to look at. What connections can you think of, just off the top of your head, regarding Jonah and Peter that might be of interest as to why he's called that? Like, none of the other disciples are really noted by their parents' name, except for two others. Exactly right. Yeah. So there was a work that they both had to do. Can anyone else tell me some other things that link between Jonah and Peter? Exactly right. There's so much alike in character. You know, like God wants Jonah to go off and do something and Jonah goes, I'm going that way. You point that way, I go this way. And you kind of go, hello. You know, God of heaven and earth tells you to do something and you go the opposite way. You know, it's sort of like really amazing sort of character. But what else do we learn? True. Yeah. That's a good one. Didn't think of that one. Yeah. And now you've made me hungry because I like it. This is just some of the ones I came up with. Very impulsive and passionate, both of them. Okay? They both wear their heart on their sleeve. And, you know, very much like Jonah. The one thing I really do love is that God had to work very hard to develop in Jonah this spiritual sight. And that's exactly the life of Peter. Peter had to start to come to see things from God's perspective. And, you know, like when we look at Matthew chapter 16, he comes up with this amazing insight. You're the Christ. You're the Son of the living God. And Christ is as if saying, yes, you've got it. You understand it. And then from that point on, he starts to tell them about how he's going to suffer. And then Peter goes, hold on a minute. That's not going to happen to you. And again, there's this Peter telling Jesus how it's going to be. And that's a preeminent part of his character that sort of seems a little bit out of place. Okay? But the reason why Peter is therefore so important to us, young people, is because we need to start seeing things from God's perspective as well. Our life is surrounded by things that we can see through our own eyes. And sometimes we decide that we're going to go off in another direction and tell God how it should be. And that's totally incorrect. We've got to see it from God's perspective. And I think that's a wonderful lesson that comes out. Do you know, through the gospel records, particularly in Matthew, Christ talks about this, the sign of Jonah, sign of the prophet Jonah. You know, all the Pharisees are saying, give us a sign, tell us who you really are. And Christ says, I'll give you one sign. It's the sign of the prophet Jonah. What was the sign of the prophet Jonah, by the way? What was the sign of the prophet Jonah? Sorry? Yes, it was the 3 days. 3 days in the belly of hell cried I, says Jonah. Well, that was the 3 days that Christ talked about, his own death and therefore being in the grave. And what's fascinating is the number three pops up all the way through the life of Peter. For instance, if you're wondering what PJJ is, it means Peter, James and John. Christ selected three special disciples and he took them and he made sort of like this little special unit that he was teaching them very deep and important things at times. And Peter was one of them. It's interesting that he denied Christ three times. If you have a look at that in the record, we didn't have time to keep reading in Luke 22. Do you know that he actually disbelieved the disciples coming back to him saying that he had risen? Peter was three times told, one by Mary Magdalene, one by the women, and I can't remember off the top of my head who the other one was. It might have been his own. It actually was his own when he ran to the tomb. It says, John believed, but Peter went off wondering. There was three occasions where he heard that Christ had risen from the grave and he didn't believe. He ignored it. Okay? It's interesting that in John 21, there's three affirmations of his love. It's interesting in Acts chapter 10, it's three times that God says, what I have called clean, do not call unclean. So this occurrence of three keeps coming up in the life of Peter. It's interesting that it says that Christ called him Peter. He goes, I'm going to call you this. Now, just stop and think about that for a moment. Just pretend that you've just met someone and they say, oh, your name's, you know, like, bless me. Oh, your name's James? Good. No longer James. It's this. You kind of go, what is that about? And again, Peter was being, in a sense, taught to be led by Christ and to understand it from Christ's perspective and to see the role that he had to play. And I think that's telling us right from the beginning that Christ had a direct plan with Peter. He knew what he was going to do with Peter and he was going to work with him to produce that very thing. And Peter had to work that out. He goes, I am going to call you the rock and that's what I'm going to do with you. Okay? Now, if you go to Mark 1 verse 29, it actually says he was surnamed. Now, we all think of a surname as like James McCann. You know, that's the part that I got from my parents because that's their name as well. But the word actually means to impose. In other words, Christ said, this is your name now. He impressed it upon him that that was what he was going to be called. And again, it's to emphasize the role that Peter had, okay, particularly in the work of Christ. And we'll come to that in a minute. So Peter was called Cephas or rock or Petros in the Greek, and therefore by interpretation that's a stone or a rock. So a little bit of background. Now what does this Peter the rock mean? Let's go to Matthew chapter 16, and we might just read around again. And when you're trying to get into Peter's thinking and mindset, when you are going through and sort of just tabulating all the occurrences of Peter, it's not an exercise, by the way, just so you can go, hey, there's 153 occurrences of Peter in the Gospels. Hint, have a look for that. Why is there 153? But you actually start to try and picture yourself walking with Peter and sort of asking, why is he reacting that way? And would you have reacted any different? Would you have reacted any different when, you know, he did this or said that? How would you have felt? Okay, growing up with the mindset you did, would you have reacted in the same way? Okay, let's read from Matthew 16, verses 16 to 23. So who's our next reader? Cool.
Simon Peter answered, you are the Messiah, the
Son of the living God. And Jesus answered and said unto him, blessed art thou, Simon bar Jonah, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father, which is in heaven.
And whatsoever thou shalt find on the earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt loose on
and charged he his disciples that should tell no man that he was Jesus the Christ.
From that time forth began Jesus to show unto his disciples how he must go unto Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed and be raised again the third day.
And Peter took him and began to rebuke him, saying, Be it far from thee, Lord, this shall not be unto thee.
But he turned and said unto Peter, Get thee behind me, Satan, thou art an enemy. For thou savourest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men.
Excellent. Now, if you can enter into that record, that is absolutely charged with so much emotion and power that you not only learn a lot about Peter, but I don't know about you, but I just go, whew. If you were one of those, even any of the other disciples, you'd be kind of wanting to crawl under a rock. This is a heated exchange. And by the way, Christ never got heated except with the Pharisees. But this was something that brought out the greatest deal of passion in Christ as well, in both a positive and a negative way. So, for instance, just looking at some of the things that you sort of learn about Peter here, he is one of the disciples, if you look at verse 16, who is really trying to grasp many of the things that Christ has been saying. And he comes out with this amazing statement of, well, you know, when Christ said, who do you say that I am? He's the first one to launch into, well, we think this. And he gives this beautiful statement. You're the Christ. Remember again, it's coming up again, this concept of the Christ, the Son of the living God. Now, there's this great deal of high in that statement. And then it's something that Christ loves to hear. And then he goes on. Now, notice this, from that time to describe that he must suffer. Now, did you notice that in verse 16 it says, Christ, you're the Christ? Then it says in the end of verse 20, that they should tell no man that he was the Christ. And from that point on, he began to show them that he must suffer. Now, what I'm trying to link in your mind is the idea that Peter did not get that he was a suffering Messiah. He got the idea that he was a Messiah. He didn't get the idea that he was a suffering Messiah. And that was the thing that is going to come out flooding in Peter's book. If you want a theme about that, it's about the sufferings of Christ. Follow that through. Colour that word in all the way through Peter's book. The sufferings of Christ, the sufferings of Christ. In other words, at the end, he got it. He got that message. And I think that's a pretty powerful thing for us as well, young people. And I love the theme that you've selected here, because this idea of not being ashamed, we live in a world where it is shameful to say that you have faith. Because today, faith is seen as a petty thing if you don't have evidence. Our evidence is the Bible. And therefore, we're not ashamed to suffer with Christ, to say we believe the Bible. And if people ridicule that and put it down and think it's old-fashioned, good on them. Because we are with a suffering Messiah. He came to show that principle into the whole world. And therefore, that was why he had to say to Peter very strongly, get behind me. You do not know what you're talking about. This is such a vital principle that if you're going to talk like that, then you are doing something very dangerous, not only to yourself, but to me. And what was driving that, young people, was self-preservation. He didn't want to suffer with Christ, ultimately, at that stage, because he thought Christ was all about coming into the kingdom and launching there and then this amazing new kingdom to which he'd be a part of. The cross had to come before the crown. And therefore, this very powerful lesson had to be embedded in Peter's mind. So get behind me, Satan. Wow, that's really strong language. Do you think that would have cut Peter? I reckon that would have cut him. But you know, one of the most beautiful things is in his letter, he talks about how Christ has showed him how Christ has talked and taught him some of these amazing lessons, and very humble man that he was then to record those things later on. So right from the beginning, the key to his life was to understand that he was a suffering Messiah. Now, just to sort of show this sort of demonstrates the amazing highs and lows in his life. And if you want to look at some other examples of his highs and lows, just a few verses to consider there. But I just want to go to this thing that Christ said. You are Peter, which is Petros in the Greek, And it says, upon this rock. Now, there's so much discussion, you know, there has been for thousands of years, of what was this rock that Christ was talking about, that of which Christ would build his ecclesia. A lot of people say, well, is it Peter? Or is it the faith of Peter? Or what is it? I don't think it's just one or the other. I think it's actually a combination of everything combined. Okay, and I know that's a bit of a cop-out, but what I'm trying to get at is the rock particularly is the suffering Messiah. That's really what the rock is. Christ is the rock personified. He is the way in which all the ecclesia, he is the foundation of which everything will be built from. But Peter was going to come to understand that principle so embedded in his life and ingrained in his heart that his faith would become the rock by which every person who understood that concept would be a part of his ecclesia. And Peter was going to take that message to the world. Now, just to sort of show you that that was the message that he took to the world, just have a look at these phrases here. Peter comes up and says, "You're the Christ, the Son of the living God." Now, by the way, living God, in the context of the Gospels, Christ had already shown that this concept of a living God was a God of the resurrection. Okay? That God had the power to raise the dead. So, he's not the God of the dead, but of the living, Christ said about the idea of resurrection, quoting the burning bush. This is from Peter's own words in Acts. Now listen to what he ties together in his understanding. He's talking about, and you read the whole, you know, thing, by the way. He, seeing this before, spake of the resurrection. There's this living God of Christ. Now, if you have to raise Christ from the dead, what must that mean that Christ had to do first? He had to die. And that was the rock that Peter came to understand like nothing else. That there had to be this suffering Christ, this suffering Messiah. Therefore, let all the house of Israel know assuredly. Because that's what Israel missed. They just thought Christ would come in and kick the Romans out. That God hath made this same Jesus whom you have crucified. See, he's now not ashamed to be standing alongside this crucified Messiah. Before, he didn't want, you know, people to know that this guy was the Christ. Because if, you know, we don't want to be associated with him in that sense. But he has made him both Lord and Christ. So there's one aspect of this rock that Peter would take. It was the faith of Christ being the foundation. This suffering Messiah would be the foundation of the entire house of God. Because the house of God is a spiritual house. People who understand that concept. Again, in Acts chapter 10, God anointed Jesus. What does the term anointed mean? It means Messiah. It means Christ. Christ actually means Messiah or anointed. God anointed Christ, Jesus of Nazareth, with the Holy Spirit and with power. Him God raised up on the third day. In other words, Peter from then on preached to the world the concept of resurrection and Christ, this suffering Messiah. And that was what he embeds into his book, that he is this suffering Christ and we are going to suffer with him. We're going to go through these fiery trials and difficulties. So, that is why Christ did actually go to Peter and say, "You will deny me three times." Because in that record that we read tonight, just go back to Luke chapter 22, Peter had his faith in Messiah, yes, but in Messiah that would come now right into Jerusalem and take over from the Romans immediately. He had the wrong concept of the Messiah and he needed to have it altered. Now, in Luke 22, by the way, I'm just going to quickly skim through this. I have this in the notes if you want it. One of the most important things to do when you're trying to piece Peter together is get into the harmony of the Gospels and work out what's happening at any particular time and the order of events. I've written the order of events up here for you, which is the order of events of the Last Supper and what was going on just around that. So if you want that, it's here. It's just on this. But when you actually piece that together, you'll realize that there were three warnings that Peter was given by Christ that he was going to deny him. Okay? Then there was three denials. Then there was three affirmations of his love. Okay? Interesting things like, Peter again, Peter, James, and John were there during that time where Christ went away and prayed three times. Then find all the references of prayer in Peter. Another little theme to look at. But if you pick up these three warnings, why was Christ telling him that he would deny him three times? He had to show him that his faith was in the wrong thing. And that's pretty confronting. But have a look here in Luke chapter 22. Verse 31, and this is actually a really good translation, because it actually demonstrates that in this occurrence, the idea of you and thee are plural and singular. When Christ is talking, he says, Simon, Simon, Satan hath desired to have you. And he's talking about all the disciples. But he stops, and can you imagine this? This is in front of everyone. He goes, but Peter, I've prayed for thee. He's pointing straight at him. You, alone, singular. That your faith fail not. This is in front of everyone. Because he knew that he had to do that to turn him around. Because at the moment, Peter's faith was in the strength of man. Not the idea that the strength of man had to be demonstrated to be rightly related to death in crucifixion. And that was the mindset that he had to overcome. So, why was Peter's faith failing? If you have a look at verse 33, it actually says, I am ready, Lord, to go with you. And the point that Christ was trying to make is, you're not ready yet. You're not ready when you think you're ready. You're only ready when you think you're not ready. You might say, what is this guy talking about? But think very carefully what I've just said. You are not ready when you think you are ready. You are only ready in God's eyes when you think you're not. Why? Because the first one, you think you're ready, means that you've got trust in yourself and your ability to do it. But when you're this small, then God says, you've got to trust in me. Then you're ready. Then I can work with you. And that was the point of what he did in John 21. And we don't have time to look at it in detail. But again, I'd recommend trying to piece together the parallels between John 18 and John 21. Because it shows you that when Christ was denied by Peter, it was three times, and it actually tells us very definitively that it was Peter standing in front of a fire of coals. And what's amazing is that when we come to John 21, it says that Christ was there, and he says there was a fire of coals there. And he sets the scene to bring Peter back. Now, we think that's pretty harsh. We think it's a bit of a grilling of Peter. But I tell you what, young people, if you are heading in the wrong direction and someone walks up to you and puts you in the right direction, then love them for that. Because that is far more than them just standing back and saying, well, he's got to work it out. Okay? Because otherwise, that may mean that one day we may never get back. And Christ loved him enough to actually try to turn him around. He had to acknowledge what had happened. He had to get the elephant out of the room. And he also had to reconfirm his calling. By the way, I'm going way over time, I'm sorry. Peter actually went back fishing. I don't know whether you've had time to read this, but in John 21 it actually says after he was raised, he went back fishing. And the reason why he went back fishing is because he thought that although Christ was raised, he thought Christ wouldn't want me to be a fisherman of men anymore. I've denied him three times, and I saw the anguish of his soul. You know, I'm not worthy. And in a sense, that was the time that Christ had him. That's now you're ready, Peter. Now you're ready, and I need to reconfirm that with you. And that's why this threefold denial Christ brought out, and it was very painful for Peter, publicly in front of everyone, to have that happen. Do you love me, Peter? Lord, you know that I love you. Do you love me, Peter? Lord, you know that. Do you love me, Peter? And he got upset on the last time because he felt the agony that he'd put his Lord through on that night. And therefore, he came to that understanding. So one of the things that you could do to sort of make this alive for yourself is go through the verses and look at what Christ said and what Peter says in reply. Some words that I've underlined here are the words to look up, because I think we just read it in the English and it says, do you love me? And there's some sheep and you know that I love you. But in the Greek, there's actually two words for the sheep. There's two words for know and there's two words for love. And they all mean different things. And it really highlights, in a sense, what Christ is driving at. The first one, more than these, relates to his boast. You know, back when he actually said, well, all these might be offended, but I won't. So Christ, again, had to work through these things with him and correct his understanding of it. But if you sort of would like, I have this little document here, which I'm a bit of a waffler, but in here, I've sort of tried to write what I think is being said and why. and why sort of he's alluding to this word and not that word. If you would find that interesting, it's here. I only printed out like a few. Didn't know Study Week was so popular. But if you really would like, I can email it through to you. But it sort of goes through, in a sense, why he used a particular word the way he did. Because some of the words, if you sort of do go looking for them, they really sort of get brought out beautifully in his letters. Can I just sort of illustrate a few? Just, are we still in Luke 22? Can you have a look at verse 32? I've prayed for thee, when thou art converted, strengthen thy brethren. That word converted there is the same word in 1 Peter 2 verse 25, and it's the word returned. And do you know what the phrase is in Peter's epistle? You've returned to the bishop of your soul. Oh, I love that. You've returned to the bishop and shepherd of your soul. When you're converted, Peter, when you return, when you finally get this and turn around, this is what I want you to do. I want you to go and strengthen your brethren. What's he doing in the first epistle of Peter? He's strengthening his brethren. And he's telling them about how we should return to the bishop. Like, it just pops out as if he was thinking about that moment in his life and embeds it in his writings. Just another little classic one. John chapter 13. Actually, no, I'm not going to have time. Can we just stay in Luke 22? You're probably there already, John. I'll make this the last point because I can smell the pizza and some of you are already salivating. In Luke 22, no, sorry, I got it wrong. It's John 21. Sorry. Too many thoughts running through my mind. I've got 2 minutes and I'm thinking, which one should I put in? So when you go through this idea of Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me, etc., you get down to verse 17. On the third occurrence, on the very last of time, it actually says Peter was grieved. Now that word there is the same word in 1 Peter 1 verse 6. Can you just now come to 1 Peter 1 verse 6 and we'll finish here. This is why, like, looking at the background and Peter, the person, I think you sort of enter into his feelings and what he's thinking about as he's writing his epistle later on. It's here in verse 6. It says, "Wherein ye greatly rejoice, though now for a season, if need be, ye are in heaviness through manifold temptations," which means trials. That word heaviness is the same word grieved back there in John chapter 21. Why is that significant? Because it actually tells us, I think, what upset him at that time. And what upset him was that I think he came to understand how Christ felt at the moment that he looked. Remember that he denied him 3 times, and it says on the very last occasion, it says he turned and looked, and Christ's eyes met him. And I think he actually came to understand that the trial of his faith in that moment, he lost it. He lost that battle. But this time was the lesson that was engraved on his heart, that now the trial of his faith was worth something. It was precious and important. And for him to go through that was absolutely vital. Why? So that it might be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ. And then he goes on to say, whom you, although you haven't seen, you love. Now, isn't that John 21? Do you love me? And I think he brings that out to talk about the idea that here is the very thing, having received the end of your faith, now that it's returned and in the right way, the salvation of his soul is exactly the wonderful message that he's going to talk about. So I'm sorry if I've sort of rushed through this, but hopefully I've whet your appetite to have a little bit of a deeper look into this amazing book. And hopefully now that I've told you all that I really want to come to Study Week, that you'll all do your part to help me get there.